Welcome back, everybody, to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I am Jason Snell, your co-host, but across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hello, Jason. Just sitting here on the other side of the podcast world.
Yep. You're facing one direction. I'm facing the other direction. The internet is between us, I guess.
Right. I don't. And a signal goes across through the ether.
Yeah, it's beamed. I'm pretty sure by robots.
Probably.
From point A to point C, and the robots live in point B. Mm-hmm. And they're listening right now. Hello to all the robots.
Hello, robots.
And also the listeners. Maybe the listeners are robots. I don't know. We have many letters this week, but we've also got a couple of reviews that we should start with. I saw that you reviewed The Mechanism, which is from the guy who brought us Narcos.
Yes. Jose Padilla. And he's got 7 Days in Entebbe out right now. And he did RoboCop in 2014. He's done some other Brazilian shows. It's pretty ambitious. It's hard to say because, like any Netflix series, it just sort of appears. It doesn't get a whole lot of advanced publicity from Netflix itself because it's not Stranger Things. And you just kind of have to measure it. Measure it on like, will people ever get to this? It's in Portuguese with subtitles, so that's going to be a struggle for some people. But I liked it. I thought it was really interesting. After a while, they sent 3 episodes. I watched 3. By the third, they stopped the thing that was really causing me to pump the brakes on the first 2 episodes, which was so much voiceover. And then it got more interesting. There's some flaws in that. The voiceover is not super great. There's a lot of expository stuff, but the series, The Mechanism, is about real world, real life political corruption in Brazil that's currently ongoing, which I actually did not know. And in researching the story and the series. So there's plenty of stuff for future episodes. They do 8 episodes here. I watched the 3, and they're not even going to get to the current stuff, which is currently toppled. Like, you know, it's embraced 3 different presidents and toppled 1 of them, possibly 2 coming up. So it's a pretty big scandal. So the series itself kind of needed a lot of voiceover to get people familiar with what they were doing. I think it was just such a crushing amount of story that it kind of imploded this series, but I still think people should give it a shot. If they're patient, I think it'll pay off.
Okay. You also reviewed, so we've had The Mechanism, and then there is Trust, which is not the Getty family movie, All the Money in the World, that famously had Kevin Spacey in it. And then they replaced him with Christopher Plummer and he got nominated for an Oscar, but it's the same family, same story, just on a TV show on FX instead of in the movie theater with Christopher Plummer.
Yeah. And the benefit of that is that they can tell the story, spanning centuries. But I start my review, as you can see in the link, when people click on the link and watch and read the review, starting with the actual FX press release, which says, you know, spanning centuries and multiple seasons. And I was like, huh? Multiple seasons? Really? I think maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves, because I really struggled with Trust, because I wanted to like it. But I'm not sure what, I mean, the movie didn't do very well, and I'm not sure what the audience is for a really rich family that implodes, and that's tragedy. But you don't ever feel sorry for them while they're imploding, because most of the people who are involved in that family are not nice people. So it's really hard to root for somebody who's like a billionaire and many, many times over, and is a penny pincher. So I struggled with it. I didn't quite know what to make of that. And I think that when it gets going further, maybe it'll branch out and you'll feel more sympathy for these people. But I think in the early going, it's just like, nah, I don't really care.
It is. I mean, I had this thought about the movie, the All the Money in the World movie, which is, it is on one level, the story of these rich people in their exalted position and what that does and how they get the all the trappings, but it's also kind of corrosive and you have weird family dynamics. That's all the stuff of drama, both based on reality and not based on reality. But it is a certain kind of thing. And then this is a real story and there are a lot of aspects of it that are kind of off-putting. So it's an interesting combination. And then, you know, committing to see a movie about it versus committing to watching a whole series about it. It's a different kind of commitment.
Yeah, and I wonder if people. I mean, it's well done. It's done by FX, so it's well done. There's really excellent actors in it. Donald Sutherland is J. Paul Getty the first, and he's appropriately evil and unlikable. But at some point, that just becomes more despicable, I think, than even interesting. At some point, and the series is kind of hinges on. That J. Paul Getty III, who's a 16-year-old boy who's basically been abandoned by his father, J. Paul Getty II, who's also a dick. His dad is a dick. His mom is the only one who's left to really love him, and she's played by Hilary Swank. The problem there is that the mom has shacked up with a new guy post-divorced, and the new guy hates John Paul Getty III, and the mom doesn't protect him enough and put up enough resistance so that J. Paul Getty III, 16 years old, goes and lives basically on his own, snorting coke on the streets of Italy and running wild and being totally broke and getting in trouble. And he gets in trouble mostly because he's a 16-year-old naive kid. And he lets other people sort of get him in trouble, but he's complicit too with the drinking and the cocaine, and he gets indebted to the mafia. It's part of a true story, and the mafia like ends up kidnapping him, thinking that they'll get money from J. Paul Getty Sr., number one, and they don't,
right?
At least at the beginning, and you know he's owed $6,000. So when your grandfather or your father won't pony up six grand, it's hard to feel sympathy for people in the middle of the story. And that's, you know, your results may vary. People out there in podcast land between the robots catching this signal. But I gotta say, I just like, who am I rooting for here? I don't know.
This is the pedigree of this show, though, is really remarkable because it is written by Simon Beaufoy and directed by Danny Boyle, right? So that's your Slumdog Millionaire team. And so, you know, I generally have liked most things that Danny Boyle has done. So he's very talented. This is interesting subject matter, but I think he's done a lot of good work. So that's interesting. The way this was spun was that it was an anthology, like that they would do a second season about a different subject, and yet that at least when they picked it up, that was the sound. Is that is that their intent, or is it literally just like do they just not want to talk about what happens if they go back to this well?
Well, from all I can tell is that this at least this first season, it's going to span centuries. So I mean, the Getty family has enough tragedy to make it that far. But they want to follow this story, which, you know, if anybody's actually wants to know about the story, you can just Google it and see how it ends. But it, you know, it's, you can follow this same story over different decades and different eras.
Interesting.
But they're going to start with this guy at 16, this kid at 16. And I would say that Harris Dickinson, who's this actor I didn't actually really know about, who plays J. Paul Getty III. He is the only thing I think at the beginning that made me keep watching, because he was just likable and innocent enough as a kid where you're like, okay, you know, you're a billionaire's grandson, but his father hasn't really got quote unquote much money from dad. So everybody is on paper going to be a billionaire, but they don't actually have money in their pocket. And everybody's kind of struggling because J. Paul Getty Sr., Donald Sutherland, is holding tight on all this money. But Dickinson as the third, he really exuded this like, yeah, I'm making some mistakes. I'm probably not the smartest kid, but he's smart, not street smart. He was actually educated and smart, and he had a really real nice appreciation of art, and he I think he was at his heart a good kid, But the point, I think, of Trust, the series, is that everyone gets poisoned by this money at some point. But he kept me going. The actor Harris Dickinson, he kept me going because I thought he was really interesting, even if he had flaws. And even when he made dumb mistakes, I'm like, well, if you were a 16-year-old kid on the streets of Italy, you might make mistakes too. So I felt empathy there. It was just the larger picture where I was like, ugh, I can't with this. Now, you know, it may get better, but they only showed us 3 episodes. So,
All right. Anyway, Trust on FX. Mm-hmm. And that's about it. Anything coming up that we should look for?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have reviews coming up, and that's all fine and good. I mean, we know that The Americans is coming back. Mm-hmm. That's going to be huge. And I think it's going to be really hard to skip any of the Russian connection.
Yeah, the final season. What a time for it.
Yeah, but I've had this idea that I kicked around for a while, and then I kind of overthought it. And then during this week, I was bouncing it around because I've been online doing I've been reading, of course, about free agency for the 49ers and the upcoming NFL draft. I'm a huge 49ers fan. And at the same time, I play fantasy baseball, and our fantasy baseball draft is coming up. So these are ideas that have been pinging around my head. And I've always had this idea of like, what if you could have like a fantasy draft for TV series? And I never really did it because trying to actually make it semi-legit, perhaps even more legit than my power rankings, which is also kind of a spoof of like fantasy world and sports world. I just kind of dropped the subject. But this week I kind of went for it, and I thought like, okay, let's not overthink it. Let me not try to give value to like different series and weight them based on their accomplishments or how much they would be worth on a dollar figure or how, like, you know, how valuable they would be in like a draft. Who would you pick first or second? Let's not put all the actual analytics onto those and just say, okay, let's just say that every network and cable channel and streaming service is in quote unquote a league, you know, like the NFL or MLB. You're in a league, and here comes this new, fresh streaming service. And they're welcomed into the league. And if they're going to get started, they need to pick 25 shows from the existing people in the league. And so that was how I started it. And so I went and I said, okay, that's a good start. Let's do that. And I thought, okay, which shows, if I was going to create my own streaming service, and with the end result being not just like the fun of picking them, but the end result being like create 25 shows that people would want to pay $10.99 a month to watch, right? So it's just like a Netflix, but clearly not as deep. It's just 25 is your seed money, basically, your seed shows. And you would create these shows, and then hopefully people would obviously subscribe to your service. You take the subscription money, just like Netflix, and you put it back into content development, and off you go. And, you know, instead of locking it down with a lot of rules, I started with the two basic rules were, one, they had to be series that were currently making shows. So like I would have picked 30 Rock or The Sopranos or, you know, or The Wire, all the easy ones you'd have picked. And then the other one was you pick a show that's currently in production. The part that I thought made it interesting was if you picked the show, you got all of its back episodes as well. You owned them all. So like if I picked Black Mirror, I had all seasons of Black Mirror. So I decided to do some drafting.
So, but I have some notes. One is that you got to pick. First off, they wouldn't let you pick just like the 25 best things. They would get in like an expansion draft or something. They would like protect their favorites, and then you'd have to like get
the
fourth
dregs.
Best show off of everybody else's streaming service. And also, it's just you, so you're drafting against nobody. So it's just you just get. So it's literally Tim just sweeping in the very best and getting it all mine. So it's probably a pretty good list, is what I'm saying.
It is a pretty good list. And, I think that if I wanted to sort of establish this, and truth be told, I was pretty far down the road already in creating the series when I thought, I was able to sort of easily sort of write away, in the column say, okay, look, I know this is not a real fantasy draft because I'm not drafting against anybody. I can basically pick any show I want and it's still going to be on the board. It's not like, you know, someone's going to pull a show off the air before I want it. And I'm going to go, oh, drats, I was going to draft that. But somewhere along that line, I thought, you know what, this would be so much probably more interesting if Dan Feinberg, fellow THR critic, and I were drafting. And in fact, it'd be way much more interesting if it was, you know, 10 other or 10 total critics or people who are TV lovers drafting something. And then you put the results up and then people could vote like who had the best draft,
right?
or more accurately. I mean, you could say that I like this lineup better, but or more accurately fitting the idea of the column, which of these quote unquote streaming services that just got 25 new shows, which of these would you pay for?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. There's a whole new fantasy sports system that you could just invent with that fantasy,
yeah.
Fantasy streaming.
Well, and the weird thing is, Jason, I was going to do it no matter what, but I did go, I mean, somebody will, I'm sure, point this out, but I did go online afterwards, and I actually, it would stun me if no one has done this before, but I cannot find a series like this. I cannot find something like I did. At all. So I hope so. But you want to hear some of the shows?
Sure.
What would you, let me ask you a question. Same premise. Let's say you and I are drafting against each other, but you have the first pick. Which show do you pick?
Using your premise, which show do I pick? I think I would pick a show that balances having a good back catalog with being still in production and, you know, with room to generate interest in what's coming. So probably it would be like Game of Thrones or Westworld. The advantage of Game of Thrones being you get the whole catalog and the last episodes would only be on my service. Westworld, the advantage would be it's got years yet to run. Even though it's only got 1 year in the catalog. But I keep thinking of something like that is buzzworthy enough that enough people are talking about it. Or Stranger Things might be another one. I'm not super, a super fan of that, but something in that category as well, where it's like it's buzzworthy enough that people are going to come and find you.
Okay, I'm going to put you at a disadvantage because you don't have a list of shows in front of you. You're going to have to kind of just pick them off the top of your head. But what if I were to tell you that you drafted first? So I gave you the chance to, and you picked Game of Thrones, which I picked. That was my number one draft choice. So if you pick Game of Thrones, I go next, I would pick Black Mirror. That was my number two.
Interesting.
Because I think sci-fi sells, Jason, across the platform, across the world, if this thing was a worldwide service. And I think it's really creative because, you know, what you're trying to create, you're not trying to like just have everything, right? Because, you know, the idea of creating a platform is you want to brand it in a way that like, hey, we have really smart top tier television, but we also have entertaining television. You don't want to just throw a bunch of shows in the lower levels, you know, like a Fuller House, I should say. I wouldn't want that. But I'm curious because so like if you picked Game of Thrones, which is my number one, and I picked Black Mirror, what would you come back with? Because it's your pick. If you picked three, what would you pick?
I would go with I thought about The Americans, actually, because of the catalog. Mm-hmm. I might go with I thought about animated, going with like Bob's Burgers or something like that. I mean, I guess you could do The Simpsons. The Simpsons could literally be a streaming service unto itself. Just ask FX because they're kind of doing that. I also think like comedy in the loop might be good, but most people are attracted by the drama side of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, given where it is and the fact that nobody can watch it because nobody's heard of it, I would be tempted with something like Counterpart.
Interesting. Okay, so now it's just somebody who plays
or
in the
Westworld,
fantasy.
Right? One of those.
Westworld's a good pick, I think, because you already have a full season.
I just I would pick Westworld, except I already picked Game of Thrones, and isn't that really boring? I'm just building HBO again at that point,
right? Well, that seems unfair. That's what kind of makes it interesting because if we were to post our things, or if we were to have our current listeners say, "Hey, you know, Jason, you kind of just built HBO. I'm not sure I want to. I already subscribed to HBO, yeah. Jason. I don't want to pay $10.99 to
your system." My third round pick will be like Veep or something. Silicon Valley, right? So it's just it's bad. It's a bad. Although some of this is also me trying to think about broad appeal and not my personal appeal, because I would probably grab like Legion, right? Atlanta, and I mean there are things that I might grab, Master of None, things that I really like, mm-hmm. but aren't probably the foundation of a streaming service I'm going to get people to pay for. I want the super broad appeal and great to market the service with.
Well, that's kind of what, when I was doing this, and again, if we had you or I doing it, or even you and I and Dan, or 10 people doing it, it would be more interesting, because what you have to think about, too, is at the same time, is if the end, they're all fun shows, and they're all great to go, but in the end game, even though it's a fantasy game or an element, if you were going to take it seriously, the trouble you have is that, you know, if you pick something like Atlanta or Master of None, all great shows that we like, you don't have a lot on your bench, right? And you don't, and they're good shows, but you have to, if you think about it in like the realm of an actual like fantasy sports, you would have to take the pretty big heavy hitters first. And yeah, like I put Stranger Things at the top at number three, and I tried to be fair as I wrote that, and I said, okay, I picked it. That was probably not a great pick, because I'm not sure how many seasons that's going to go. They all got pay raises this year, and they're all getting older and they're aging out. You can maybe get 5 seasons if you really hurry out of there. But, you know, even if you don't like sports, the idea of actually like what is more valuable is a concept that translates in a game like this. And for me, I would have thought one of your early picks would be Doctor Who.
Yeah, I mean that's an interesting thought. It's on cable here, right? But that it's still valuable, and I would get the entire Doctor Who archive, presumably, which is pretty good. So
yeah, you'd get every season.
I would consider that in my but again, I'm trying to like downplay like the stuff I like versus the stuff that's got broader appeal. And like Game of Thrones or Westworld, I think has a broader appeal and it's more marketable. Doctor Who has a built-in audience, which is nice. And so mm-hmm. I think it might be a value pick down in the, you know, fourth or fifth slot in a draft, mm-hmm. something like mm-hmm. that. But I would try to go with some prestige, big name kind of like dramas that have a lot of buzz around them, just because that people are going to be talking about it. And now I own it.
Right. Exactly. And we could talk about more of these like when it comes out. But I will say you named a few that were already on the list. And I had fun doing this, and I'm hoping to do this regularly, kind of like a power rankings thing. But, you know, one of the things when I did it, I kind of thought, oh, like if you think about the idea of being able to own all the content, like so Doctor Who going back to the very first episode, boy, that's such a great pick, because you've just populated your streaming service with countless episodes, and it's a built-in fan base that's totally loyal. And if they couldn't get it anywhere else, they would subscribe to your service.
Exactly. It's kind of why if you were launching a service today, mm-hmm. and you had the ability to commission a Star Trek show and put all the mm-hmm. other Star Trek series on your streaming service, you would probably do that, which is what CBS All Access is. So I guess Star Trek Discovery would have to be on that list, because you're getting all the back catalog if we follow these rules, and you've got some room for growth, because it's a new series with a new cast that might pick up some buzz too.
Yeah, and I think that was the fun thing about it, because that's how you'd have to think as you put it together. But you'd also want some of your favorites, and you'd want to have like a diversity and all that kind of stuff. But when I was putting together, it was one of the fun things that I discovered when I was making it, was as you're trying to put together this theoretical, you know, large, you know, mass appeal channel, but not watered down mass appeal, that you'd have to like, you know, come up, you'd obviously at the end, you know, if you were actually doing this in the actual format of a fantasy sports, at the end, you're kind of the dregs. You don't have a lot of good picks left. All the Star Trek Discoveries and the Game of Thrones, they're all gone. They're all off the table. Uh-huh. But I thought that I kind of had found value in picks like, you know, Planet Earth 2, because technically I get Planet Earth 1. Right.
Sure.
This is rich cultural programming, but also, and I only know this because I reviewed Blue Planet, which I think is an excellent excellent series as well. And there's a Blue Planet 1 and 2, but...
You get those. You also get that weird NBC sci-fi show Earth 2. You get that one, too.
No, you don't
get
that
one. You get that Terra Nova, that show? You get that show, too. Just we'll throw it in. It's also about
You're killing me with Terra Nova. All the possibilities that could have been there with Terra Nova. But yeah, like, it's funny that they did brand it Planet Earth : Blue Planet. And I started laughing. I was like, hey, one pick gets me four of the all-time great, you know, high definition
nature documentary
documentaries.
Yeah.
So that was fun. So that'll come out. I talked to my boss. They could have thrown it up today, but Friday is obviously a slow news day, so they're going to stick it up Monday, and maybe next week we can talk about it.
All right, yeah, that'll be good. And actually, I was going to mention before we go on to the letters that that something we do this time of year is we do the Incomparable member drive, and people can actually support this podcast directly. And one of the things we do as a bonus for that, we did Tim TV last year. Maybe this year we should do Tim versus Jason TV and do a little bonus episode where we do draft some stuff and think of some rules.
Would love that.
I'm going to ponder that for next time. Maybe next week we'll record that after we do the regular show. I've got some ideas about some constraints to put on it to make that an interesting back and forth. And you need competition. You see, you can't just like, oh, I'm going to draft, but it's just me drafting. Yeah, I'm going to pick all the best. That's like I'll pick every player. I'll play Clayton Kershaw is going to be first. Jose Altuve is going to be second. I get them a judge. I want Judge and Stanton. I want them both.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I deserve that.
So I'm just saying. I think as a little competition, maybe. Anyway, for people who are curious about that, you go to theincomparable.com/members. You can sign up, and then you're asked to pick the shows on the network you'd like to support. If you check the box for TV Talk Machine, that entire contribution comes to us, and then my wife writes Tim a check. That is actually how that works.
That's how it works. Yes.
And it comes in the mail. If you listen to other podcasts on this network, you can check their boxes too. This is not one of those. You can swear while you check the boxes if you like, but it's a different kind of box checking. And then your contribution gets split across all the shows you want to support. And you do get extras. We try to do an extra every year for this show, but every other show is also doing extras. For my Incomparable podcast, once we do a recording, we immediately post that in this like bootleg feed, so you don't have to wait for me to edit the episode and post it a few weeks later. It's just available instantly. There's a whole bunch of extras. Our Total Party Kill podcast, there's a whole season of it that we did in advance that's already posted for members that nobody else is going to hear for a few months. Stuff like that. So levels at $5, $10, and $20 a month. There are annual equivalents. Check it out, theincomparable.com/members, if you want to support us. And if you contribute to higher levels, then you get some special goodies in return. I'm still mailing them out from last year. I just am at the end of that process now with the goodies. They all are actually sent from my house. I sit down at the table watching TV, laundry folding shows, basically. We had a lot of email about laundry folding.
I bet you did. And you know, I don't want to one up your, because I can't do that, your idea of us drafting as a special bonus for donations, but I bet you people out there probably have good ideas of what they would want us to do. Like, hey, if you guys did this, that would be great.
Let us know, or wrinkles on the draft idea or whatever else. Yeah, absolutely. Let us know.
You know what we should do? We could probably dominate the traveling podcast world if we ever took us out on the road, and then we drafted 8 people from the audience, and if we had like an electronic big board.
Oh, wow.
With shows, and we had like a live draft at a draft house.
Oh man, Tim, you're just describing my dream, which is just to travel the country performing live, and everything we do live is just drafting things. I would love to do that.
I would love that too. We just need to get like the software that we can project on a screen in a bar people.
Not
drinking.
A problem. I'm sure we
Is
could
it
do
really?
That. Yeah, I'm sure
know.
We could do
you
that.
Could do it.
I'm sure we could. I know people. We could make that. We could make
you
that work.
You know people. You do actually.
I do.
Or yourself.
I know software developers. I know like dozens of people who make a living writing software. I'm sure it could be done.
Well, let's not forget that there was a time in our history where I said, I have this idea and I don't think it can ever be done. And you're like, here's half an hour later, it was done. And you like sent the code over.
Oh,
so,
see, I thought you were going to mention the meetup, which is a thing that still hasn't happened.
Hey, look, a meetup is harder than writing code.
Yes,
really is.
Apparently it is. Apparently. Now that I mentioned the meetup, everybody in the Bay Area is going to send us another email about meeting up somewhere. We should do that at some point somewhere. Almanac, my friend at Almanac Brewing, they just opened their new tap room in Alameda. Maybe we could do something like that, a little out of the way from the downtown San Francisco buzz. Although we'll get more people if it's downtown in San Francisco. I don't know.
Yeah, because they'd have to drive to Alameda. But I do love that idea. Look, drafting in a draft house.
Drafting.
I'm telling you, it's brilliant.
Oh,
we can take it to Austin.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. That would be hilarious.
So if anybody listens to this podcast, that's my idea, trademarked.
Okay, television drafts are your idea now?
Television drafts in a draft house, to be specific,
in a draft,
Jason.
I see. That does push it over the edge. You're right. I just realized once again, the ATX Festival is the weekend after Apple's Developer Conference in Austin. So
you can't go, huh?
Well, I could probably go, but I'd have to it would just be back-to-back insanity, but I could probably
You'd have
do
this
it.
Gigantic beard.
If we're invited, let's get the ATX people to invite us down there to draft things in a draft house, and then we'll be set. Let's do it.
Well, I did get something from them saying that there's going to be some kind of, it seemed kind of like, I was like, you know what, you're messing with brands here. I don't know what's going on, but they saying that they're going to set up like a Hulu-sponsored, or I don't know, whatever, where you people who are there, you can do your podcasts while you're at ATX.
Yeah, of course. Of course you can.
Of course you can.
Of course. But just don't draft things or you're going to hear from Tim.
Yes. No drafting
in
the Alamo Draft House.
The letters. Let's get to some letters unless you've got more Columbo.
No. I don't have none.
Business. My Vote Gone Poetry, the MVP from the 716. Ask a question to you, Tim. How do TV shows reflect our country's current state? Will more escapist fare be the trend, or will shows get even darker to outpace the insanity that is real life?
Wow. I'm thinking it's going to go into lighter fare, because I think with now that we have John Bolton in the administration, and we could all die next week in a double war with North Korea and Iran, I think the next development is going to be like fast forwarding any comedy you have out there. Give us a distraction.
Rainbows, spaceships, whatever. Wizards.
Yes, absolutely. Something I want to see rainbows and unicorns. I don't want to think about nuclear annihilation or just depressing stuff. I did actually think, I mean, in all seriousness, I wrote this a long time ago, thinking there was going to be more kind of Trump-centric kickback, but I don't know. I haven't seen it much of it.
Listener Kathleen tweeted at us, things you don't expect on podcasts. Jason's laundry process turns out to be way more interesting than Alan Cumming's new show. Just again, I mentioned that my wife has laundry folding programs that are available, and that's a whole class of program is the laundry folding. Mm-hmm. I did laundry today. listener James wrote in to say, this week's episode got me wondering, has there ever actually been a show entitled Folding Laundry? I envision the owner of a laundromat, played by Tom Selleck, getting stains out of laundry by day and society by night, except that he can't because he's too broke and too tired, to which I would say, I think, James, you're missing the point, is Tom Selleck owns a laundromat, but he has a friend who's a cop, and together they solve crime. Cop, not a cop.
Oh, boy. Yeah. And everybody is arrested in the laundromat. I don't know. There's some
it could be.
There.
Well, he's going to be a stain expert, so it's kind of going to be like CSI, except his knowledge comes from knowing about stains on clothing, so he's going to be like, that's not a blood stain, that's chocolate. We need to look for somebody who had ice cream.
Getting the stains out of society.
That's all.
One curb at a time.
No, that's. But you'll have your downer episodes where he'll say things like, you know, there's some stains you just can't get out no matter how hard you wash them. That'd be a real downer. Did you see the sunrise kind of Magnum PI episode of what's the show called? Folding Laundry. Thank you, James. Let's see. This is just it's back and forth. MVP also wrote in to say, I have an idea for a new innovation for viewers who love Counterpart but get confused. It's called subtext titles, and instead of just being the dialogue, it explains what is really going on in a scene. This made me laugh. It's the let's turn on the subtext for this, and it'll explain. You see, this person is betraying this other person. It's like, oh, right, that's what's happening here. All right,
it's a great. Subtext, I think, subtitles.
Get ready for that. We heard from Larry from the 916 who sent us a picture of the TV talk machine logo on a phone right next to the Alcazar Castle in Segovia, Spain, one of the castles that inspired Walt Disney. And this worldwide simultaneous release was happening at the castle. So thank you to Larry from the 916 for sending that.
Larry.
In. Yeah, that's right. From Spain.
That's bringing back the flat bastard.
The flat bastard
there,
from Spain. Yeah. I had somebody else in my, who I was talking to mentioned execution of Romanian dictator Nicolae Ceausescu. And I was reminded of the fact that we once got a picture of a flat bastard from the guy who was at Ceausescu's grave, which was like a little morbid way to celebrate a television podcast.
Hall of Fame first ballot.
One of the best of all time. All right. Some letters. Matt from the 330 wrote in saying, Tim, why don't you write an expose on how Netflix is making guinea pigs of us all? Blow the lid off this thing. Democracy dies in darkness, and so do those skip back buttons. Anyway, regarding laundry folding shows, I generally find it hard doing both at once, so I usually just listen to podcasts. Since I fold laundry on Saturday, that means I'm usually listening to a certain podcast released simultaneously worldwide the night before. In fact, hold on to your hats, I was listening to you discuss laundry folding shows while I was folding my laundry.
Oh my God.
Oh, my meta. Mind is blown.
Mind blown. Meta.
Anyway, Matt says, also goes on to say, I also wanted to mention I passed on so many mediocre shows lately. I've had time to rewatch Sad Spies, aka Patriot, and it's absolutely worth the time. Thanks for inspiring me with your recent discussion of it. Any word on when this may be coming back? I don't know. It's coming back. I think I saw that they were shooting it. So yeah. I think it is coming back. But
yeah, because Sneaky Pete has already come back, and those kind of came roughly about the same time, I think.
Yeah. Well, this is a new trend. One of the nice things about shows getting multiple season orders is that they can produce the shows faster. So like Counterpart, which has not yet concluded its first season, they were tweeting pictures of how they're shooting the second season now. Like, so it's going to come, it won't be a year and a half before that show comes back, which is a good thing.
Well, all right. I do have one quick,
Columbo'd me, man. Okay,
wow,
go ahead.
Man. You know, the parameters for defining a Columbo moment are
I
really
started to
wide,
say things
man.
And you were like, but, I've got a thing.
That's it. So it's just, you have to start talking and then I have to interrupt you.
I'm just
you.
Flowing
a
with the format and then you remembered something completely different that you wanted to talk about. It's fine. It's your show. What is it, Tim? I was just going to read another letter. It's fine. The letter can wait. Robbie in the 770's letter can wait for a moment.
We cut to Robbie tapping his fingers. Damn it, Tim. Get to it. I would just say that as people should be pouring into watching Counterpart more and more and going to MVP's concept of subtext and subtitles, I actually thought watching that series, if you haven't watched it and you're going to do it, I thought that watching that series was made exponentially easier by me yelling at the TV series at the screen, that's Light Howard, that's Dark Howard,
yeah.
Light Howard, Dark Howard, Dark Howard.
Yep.
That's the only thing that worked for me.
And they trick you because they change their clothes halfway through.
I know, which was hard.
Boy, there's one more. I'm looking forward to it. And it's not this weekend because of Easter, I want to say. Or no, it's not Easter this weekend, but they're not showing it this weekend. They're showing it on Easter Sunday. I don't understand what they're doing. Oh. I don't know what's going on there, but I am looking forward to that finale of Counterpart. And it's been a great ride. Robbie, here's Robbie's letter. Hey gang, I just heard the email from Reg in the follow-up conversation about how ridiculous Donald Glover's character on Atlanta can be with his decision-making. It seems like you and Reg are all missing a huge point here. I think the point of Earn is that he's the guy who's smart enough to get into Princeton, but also the guy dumb enough to drop out and end up sleeping in a storage unit. Bad decisions are what this guy is all about. As someone who can relate to what the character is going through, it's kind of refreshing to see that this isn't really a redemption story for a guy with a checkered past. Usually the way this goes in network TV would be, Earn is the Breaking Bad model, where the super smart character who makes bad decisions evolves into a successful super genius who makes no sense to me. Can anyone really imagine their high school chem teacher being smart enough across fields of chemistry, physics, engineering, and sociology to pull off the stuff that Walt does? Earn is human. He makes mistakes. This show is the reason I advocate for having poor people in every writer's room. $4,000 isn't life-changing, or else the poverty line would move every year when people get their tax returns. In reality, I think these episodes are doing a lot more to develop the character than you're giving them credit for. Episode 1 shows Cat Williams as an eventuality for Earn if he continues down his path. Episode 2 shows us the reality of his speech in the original episode with Darius and the puppies. Poor people can't afford to make long-term investment deals, but when Tracy presents a quick flip, of course Earn is all over it. That was the whole point of the season one episode. Earn wanted a way to grow his funds and was upset with Darius for making him wait. Episode 3 is all about reminding us who Earn is. He's not a brilliant father of one who wants to make a better life for his daughter and girlfriend. Nope, he's just a broke dude that wants to stunt for once in his life. Listening to you guys talk about it reminds me of how I feel watching shows like How to Make It in America and rolling my eyes because neither of the main characters were acting realistically broke enough for me to think of it as more than just a time waster. Best wishes to everyone's mother, Robbie, in the 770. I think really good, interesting perspective on
that. Is a good, that is a very good perspective. I thought that was very good,
and I think accurate descriptions of sort of. I mean, this is the deal with Earn in Atlanta. And you can like it or not like it, but this is who he is. He is the guy who's smart enough to get into Princeton and dumb enough to drop out and end up sleeping in a storage unit. And he is the guy who wants the quick turnaround and doesn't want to wait and have his money locked up in dogs.
Yeah, so that was well done. Yeah. That was very good. That was very well.
But we're pulling for him. That's the thing, is that I want Earn to be okay. And so every time he does something that leads in a bad direction, plus Atlanta, you get the feeling like some TV shows you watch where it's like, oh boy, how is this going to go badly? It's always because you know it is. You know it is. But you still pull for him. And that's part of the brilliance of the show, I think. All right, that's it. That's all the letters. Although if you would like to have your letter or tweet read, you can do it. It's pretty easy. podcast@tvtalkmachine.com and the emails, or you can tweet us at TVTM. Sometimes I check the Facebook page, although I got to be honest, this week I didn't go to Facebook and I'm not sorry. So maybe use another
Cambridge
mechanism.
Analytics, that's their problem.
Not feeling very charitable toward Facebook right now.
No,
my apologies to all the very nice people who use Facebook and the TV Talk Machine page on Facebook, but I'm just not that into it right now. So, but the Twitter and the emails, those work, and those will come to me, and then we will read them on the show next week. Anything else, Tim, before we go? I don't want to, you know, if anything come to mind.
I am not going to clump you. I will say that I did throw my phone away from me and onto the bed. Mm-hmm. So that was good. A little late, little lesson learned too late, but no, I'm not gonna columbia you. I got everything. Here's what I will say though, that is this a columba if I say this now?
No, because okay. I'm not trying to say anything.
Okay, so you actually opened the door for the columboing.
That's right. Columbo-ing. This is like Detective Columbo. Is there anything else you'd like to say? That's not that's not the same. He'd be like, no, actually, I'm just going to go now. I have no further questions. No further questions. I'm just going to leave.
I would just say, I think that the idea of you and I doing a draft as an entire podcast is got me excited.
All right. Well, that is maybe that will be the member special.
I like that as a member special. And I will do my research, my friend.
Okay, we'll come up with some rules.
Yeah, I don't want you to come up and say, oh, hey, look, Doctor Who, third round. I'm gonna have to up my game to beat you that way.
Well, so I've got some ideas for rules of like getting some new stuff, getting some catalog stuff that's finished. Maybe throw that in, which was not part of your premise, right? Like what shows would you pull out of the archive?
Oh, yeah. Finished pieces. Okay, that's a good one.
I have two. Before we go, I have two random things that I'm just going to mention.
And wait, did you just combo me?
I did.
Okay.
One, maybe. I have been watching for totally random, no reason other than that I wanted to. I have been watching some old episodes of MASH without the laugh track, which is how it's available on DVD, and it's great. It is a single camera, I mean, from 1972 or whatever, single camera, essentially, for most of it. It's not like it filmed before a studio audience. And with a DVD version, you can take the laugh track off. And it's, I won't say that it holds up perfectly, because especially in the early episodes, the sexual politics are, you know, they're still leaning into that kind of Randy Doctors chasing nurses around, which I think it backed off of after a little while. But still, pretty good, and feels much more modern because of the way it was shot and because there's no laugh track on it, which makes it feel much less like a sitcom from 1972. So I wanted to mention that. And the other thing I wanted to mention is I'm going to say again what I've been saying the last couple of weeks, which is the third season of The Magicians is killing it. It is much better. And I say that to people and they're like, oh, should I just skip the first two seasons? I'm like, no, I kind of like the first season, but the second season is better. The second half of the first season is better. It just keeps getting better. But I would watch those if you haven't seen The Magicians. But the third season, there is something special. They really, I'd say they've been like five or six out of the first nine episodes or whatever have been not only really good, but really different. Like they will have a concept for an episode and say, what if this episode is in a parallel universe? What if this episode is in like a little time bubble? Well, this one's going to all be about these characters. And then they kind of knock off one by one, like, and make a really nice episode, just enjoyable episodes. And that's, you know, I expected that show to be in cruise mode where it would be continue to be a show that I enjoy and is fine, and I did not expect this, which is that the third season is way better. Like they did something. They've really elevated their game this year, which is nice to see. I like to see a show dramatically improve 3 years in. That's kind of hard to do, I would think, but I'm trying to think of an example of a show that went from being good to being kind of great 3 years in. Does that really happen 3 years in?
Yeah, that's
not that often.
I mean, there's certainly shows that get better each episode, but I think you're saying this is like a quantum leap of some sort.
It kind of feels like it. Like The Magicians was always a show that I watched and thought was fine, and sometimes I would let it sit on the TiVo for a while, but I'd get to it, and I would say, well, yeah, you know, but I prefer The Expanse because I like the science fiction a little more than the fantasy, but Magicians is fine. And this year, like, I see that there's a new episode of The Magicians on the DVR, and it is immediate watch. It has gone.
Wow.
It has gone that far, and that's based entirely on just the quality of the work. So, just want to put in a plug for it. They've done some good work.
A ringing endorsement. Can I just say that if this episode is not called the Columbo episode, you have failed as a podcast title labeler.
Okay. Yes, sir. I will work.
Or some variation of that.
I was gonna have it be about the robots that are between you and me. But now I think you're right. I think Columbo. It has to be all about Columbo. Shows from the 70s, actually.
Yes.
Just like MASH, there's the Columbo. We haven't had MASH
moment. You're going to be our 70s specialist.
No, I think listener David J. Lohr, and sometimes guest host, he is our 70s specialist. Sometimes I think he is a time traveler.
Yeah, but if you give David Lohr like 5 seconds, he's going to turn it to the theater because he wants to turn this into a theater podcast.
Yeah,
I know him.
He does.
He's tricky.
He does. He'll tell you about that episode of MASH where there was like the spotlight and it was a little more deconstructed and it was much more like a theater episode than an actual sitcom. He will do that too.
15 minutes later, we're talking about Streetcar Named Desire.
Yeah, no, but if we could bring him in the draft, and you know what he would do is he would draft a streaming service entirely made up of TV shows from the 70s.
Right, exactly.
Right,
exactly.
And like Life on Mars, things made in the 70s or set in the 70s. Those are your only choices.
Exactly. I think I could say that David Lohr, with some certainty, would always lose the fantasy TV draft, but he would probably have the most interesting team.
Yes, I agree with that.
Always lose.
Well, that's always the challenge because we do a bunch of drafts, dumb drafts on The Incomparable, and it's the same thing. Do you want to be entertaining? Do you want to look at your list and be like, well, I don't know what the rest of you were doing, but I like my list. And that is sometimes you pick things, like I said, with HBO, with Westworld and Game of Thrones. It's like, that's kind of boring. I think those are solid picks, but it's kind of boring. Like, do I want to be entertaining and pick something more wacky? And I think David would do that, where he would be like, I love my list and it's wacky, and everybody else be like, I don't know what you're doing. But hi to David. David's probably out there right now listening to this with the robots that are listening between you and me and the internet. Okay, I brought it all the way back around to the beginning, so now it's time to say goodbye. Thank you, everybody, whether you're at a castle in Spain, you're in Australia, you're folding laundry, wherever you may be, thank you for listening to TV Talk Machine. We'll be back next week, and until then, Tim, have a great weekend.
You too. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.